Audio.
Yeah, is there, you know, I didn't watch, you sent me that clip today and I didn't finish watching it, but is there a scene where Guinan is on a carousel or something?
Yes, it's at the end.
At some point.
That was only a six-minute clip, Ryan. How did you not finish that? It's 6 minutes. That was your homework, and you didn't finish it?
Well, I'd seen it before. I thought I could just wing it.
Are you insane?
They are insane.
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Matt Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Spock.
Oops!
Oh, thank you very much, Renee.
Merry Christmas, Uncle.
And Merry Christmas to you, too.
Renee, can you help me with the table?
Sci-fi has sort of a mixed track record when dealing with Christmas or this holiday time frame. I'm talking to you right now here in December 19th, 2016. Christmas is coming up. If you celebrate Christmas, great. If not, Christmas is a big holiday. But science fiction doesn't quite know what to do with it a lot. Star Wars infamously blew that in 1978 when they released a Star Wars holiday special. This is where they got a bunch of people who didn't know what Star Wars was and tried to make a variety show around Christmas time. Released in 1978, November 17th, with Bea Arthur, Harvey Korman, Art Carney, Jefferson Airplane, and Wookiees as the leads. And if you recall, Wookiees don't speak English. So you had a two-hour special with your protagonist not speaking a word of English. Bruce Valanche, the comedy writer, he wrote the script. It was a spectacular mess. Watch Carrie Fisher try to sing the light song while presumably she might be a little coked up. She's admitted to being on coke, so I'm not going far afield to say she's really sweaty when she's singing the light song. Watch Han Solo, watch Harrison Ford wrestle with a stormtrooper over Kashyyyk's rope bridges and throw him over the side. Watch Mark Hamill show up and not quite know what's going on. But you know what? It was a holiday special, and they did it. Doctor Who does Christmas specials every single year, and you know, they do a really good job. They nail it almost every single time. And Star Trek? Well, Star Trek, they did their Halloween episode with Cat's Paw. We've already talked about that. Not a very good try. Kind of a muddled solution to coming up with a Halloween special. But I also contend that they tried to do a Christmas movie. Star Trek Generations. Let me correct myself a little bit when I say it's a Christmas movie. It's not a Christmas movie. It is about Dr. Soren, played by Malcolm McDowell, trying to get into something called the Nexus and Energy Band so he can be reunited with his loved ones, because it creates this sort of pocket universe where you live out your wildest fantasies and dreams. And he's willing to destroy an entire star and accompanying planets with people on it in order to get into this Nexus. He's part of Guinan's race, the Ellalorians, which brings her into it. And none of that I said has anything to do with Christmas. Except for what happens when Captain Jean-Luc Picard, played by Patrick Stewart, is accidentally thrust into the Nexus and he receives what his heart's desire is. This Nexus gives you what makes you happy, I guess, is what I can frame it as. For different people, it's different stuff. But for Patrick Stewart, Captain Jean-Luc Picard, it is a Victorian Christmas. It's so weird, you guys. If you haven't seen it, you have to see it. Now, first of all, it's a beautifully shot scene. It's a beautiful, wonderful scene where he wakes up blindfolded and suddenly he's surrounded by kids. They're his kids. And he has a wife and she's dressed in Victorian garb and they're dressed in Victorian garb and they say, "Hello, Papa, come and let's open presents." And it's all like a very Christmas carol-y kind of thing. And he's still dressed as Captain Jean-Luc Picard, but he buys into it. Because this is what he wants more than anything in the world. But that was a problem, because that was not exactly what people had thought Captain Jean-Luc Picard would want. It was very incongruous, and it kind of stuck out. And I don't quite know why they did it, but I do know that Star Trek Generations was released in November 1994, November 18th. So it was a holiday movie. So If they were trying to be marketable, smart, savvy, they were trying to get a little bit of Christmas in this show. Did it work? In my opinion, not so well. But that was a long time ago. Maybe it does now. So I took another look at it, and I called my friend and TNG aficionado Ryan Nagata, and 5 days from Christmas, 6 days from Christmas, we talked it over.
Hello?
Ryan? Ryan Nagata?
Yes.
Ryan,
it is I.
What are you doing here? What are you doing here in my fantasy nexus, Ryan? Why are you here?
I think the writers just needed someone in here to get you out, so they just put me in here.
What a random occurrence that you're here with me. This is so strange. Well, Merry Christmas, Ryan. Merry Christmas to us all.
Merry Christmas.
How are you, Ryan?
I'm good. I'm good. So strange, I haven't talked to you in a while, and now we're on a podcast.
I know, and now because
so I want to talk to you about things that aren't Star Trek, but...
No, you don't. What do you? We never talk about anything but Star Trek. What do you want to talk to me about?
That's true.
Everything we talk about inevitably goes to Star Trek, Ryan, and that makes me really happy.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably why I'm still friends with you. And so many people that I don't talk to anymore. But
I know.
Yeah.
Well, you have a kid now, so that's already insulating you from the rest of the world. That's already your own nexus, isn't it? You've fallen into.
Yeah, it's made it even harder.
Yeah.
My social anxiety was tough enough, but now that I have a kid, it's like I just never leave. So.
But having a kid is great for social anxiety because you can always defer to them. Like, oh, I gotta go check on the kid, you know, and then you walk off and, you know, like, oh, I didn't need to be part of the conversation, you know.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. She's great. And she always puts on a show. Everybody looks at her anyway, so.
How old is Penny right now?
It's great. She's 2.5.
Oh, my gosh, 2.5. She's great. Penny was at the Star Trek convention with us, I should point out.
Yeah, she was great. Somebody took a photo of her, and it was like retweeted like 1,000 times or something. It was a big deal. It was weird. I was on Twitter, and then I saw this picture that some girl had posted. She said like, "Oh my god," and it was Penny like drinking a glass of water with a Star Trek outfit on, and it was taken from like really far away. It was like blown up like 10 times digitally, and it was cute. It was a cute picture. That's why it went viral, but. I had nothing to do with it.
And you did not give your permission to have that picture reproduced or distributed?
No.
It's too late. That'll teach you for putting your kids in cute outfits there, Ryan. well, what else do you want to talk about, Ryan? I mean, like, before we jump into this, is there anything you really want to talk to me about? Or is this just, I mean, or after the podcast?
No, I don't know. You brought up Generations, so I haven't seen it in years. And I was trying to remember... you know, things that I would want to talk about it. And then you brought up the Christmas thing, which I knew that's why you wanted to talk about Generations, but...
am I that transparent, Ryan?
Great.
Am I so... my motive is so clear to you that you know what's going to happen?
Well, no, I know, you know, as a somebody who creates content for things, you want to make it topical, and it's near the holidays, and that's the only example of holiday stuff in Star Trek that I can think of.
This
so.
and Cat's Paw. Cat's Paw is the only that's an actual like Halloween.
Right. I was just kind of thinking about Christmas stuff.
Yeah.
There might have been stuff in the later ones. I don't know. I can't remember.
Well, you've seen them all, so I mean, you should have a closer. But I think you're right. I think they've stayed away from holidays, and probably with good cause too, because I think they're 0-2 at least in the ones we've seen between Cat's Paw and now this. Although when we were tweeting, texting back and forth, you said, and I quote, you said this was a no joke. This was a sweet scene, or what is it?
That was a joke.
Oh, was that a
that
joke?
That was a
okay.
joke. But I guess it's somewhat maybe it's somewhat rooted in truth. I look at stuff like that now much differently than I did when I saw it as a teenager.
Right.
I think it was just cheesy then, but I understand the meaning behind it. I want to mention one thing about Generations, though, is that I realize that movie represents the peak of Star Trek excitement for me. like yes. in my lifetime.
Yes.
I think the peak is somewhere in that movie, because when I went into it, I don't think I'd ever been more excited about Star Trek. And when I came out of it, you know, I think it was a little less so.
That was so our peak oil, wasn't it? Yeah.
My peak is somewhere.
Yeah.
For me, anyway, probably not for you. But, I mean, there have been other peaks since, but nothing ever that high. I was really excited about and I can't say I was as excited for First Contact, even though it's arguably a much better movie. But, yeah, so I guess that was that's the best Star Trek ever got, was before I went into that movie.
Well, and to set the stage for that, too, I was just as excited, I think. I mean, maybe watching Star Trek 3 or 4, probably Star Trek 3, it's like, oh, they're going to find Spock. But, I mean, this was the height of Star Trek. I mean, the show was ending. It had just ended that year, Next Generation, right? And they're flipping right over, and they had gotten – they were making – it was literally passing off the baton with, the big three from the original series of Kirk, Scotty, and Chekhov, mm-hmm. which is such a weird combination.
You know, if you watch that scene again, you know it was meant for Spock, Bones, and Kirk.
Oh yeah,
it's really obvious that they didn't change the dialogue at all.
No, it's so...
Scotty's dialogue is Spock's lines, and I think Chekhov even says at one point, like literally, like, "Where's your medical staff?" And like, "You just became nurses." and then when he sees that Kirk is dead, he says, "My God, was anybody in here?" But I don't think Chekhov ever said the words "My God,"
no,
ever. That's, but that was clearly a Bones line.
My God,
that's great.
Was anyone in there? Yeah, it was such a weird grouping to bring aboard. It's like after having six successful movies. With Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, the big three, who comes through the bridge turbo lift? But Kirk, Scotty, and Chekhov, and you're like, what has just happened here? and then they turn around and like, who's the captain? But Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You're like, what is going on? I don't understand this. It's so.
Well, I think they wanted to find somebody kind of meek, you know. But I think that, you know. Maybe it was a little too on the nose, like the weak captain. I don't know. It's just that was strange casting.
It was. but they're only there for a short period of time, and this is really kind of like I don't want to go over like all of Generations, because I think that we can save that for another day. I'm subdividing so much of the stuff I really enjoy talking about, Ryan. Now, it just because I want to savor it. You know, in Generations.
Yeah, that's true.
We really have.
There's only so much.
Yeah.
If you did a podcast for each, you know, series or movie, then you'd be done already.
Well, this is true. I mean, there's 700 episodes of it, but still, I don't want to be like, oh, here's like sixth season Voyager episode. Like, I don't want to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah, it makes sense.
It's boring.
So I think dividing it up thematically is the right idea.
Yeah.
Just not when you talk to me, because I want to just talk about the weirdness.
Oh, well, we will. But I want to set the stage here because this is such a weird scene. So if you're following along on the podcast at home, so we're talking about the movie Generation. I might tee this up earlier. I'm not quite sure. But and Picard is trapped in this energy band called the Nexus. And
right.
And he's unintentionally caught in this band where Malcolm McDowell is Sauron wants to get to, but Picard gets
it. McDowell? Malcolm McDowell,
yeah, Sauron.
Yeah.
He wants to go there, but somehow Picard ends up in it, and Captain Kirk, too. And so this place gives you everything you want. It gives you your heart's desire, I guess. And so Picard's heart's desire is a Victorian Christmas.
Yeah.
Which is so weird. It this movie was released, I believe it came out November 18th, I think, of 90.
I don't remember the date.
I looked it up. It was November
18th. But it was 94. I think it was 94, yeah.
Yeah, so November 18th, 94. So they were making a Christmas film. They wanted to make this Christmas, and they have nothing to do with Christmas in this until this scene, this little 6-minute scene where suddenly we're doing a Christmas carol and Captain Picard finds himself blindfolded. Do you like that he's blindfolded at first? Isn't that like a weird choice?
Yeah.
He's like, what's going on?
That's a theme that they've visited in Star Trek a lot, like from the original series. About, you know, I think earlier today we were talking about All Our Yesterdays, which is, you know, about, I think there's something where Spock and Bones are in that cave, and Spock meets that woman, that cave woman, and
Marriott Hartley,
and he's reverting to his primitive self, and he, you know, he wants to, like, live there and have a family. But but ultimately Bones, like, shakes him out of it and says, like, well, you know, guys like us can't have families. We have to, you know, go out and adventure and whatever. And so I guess Spock goes along with him. But, yeah, there's a lot of episodes like that. And I think that the Generations thing was just Picard's version. Like I guess he deep down always wanted to just settle down and have a family. And
but he didn't.
Was pulled by a greater purpose or something like that. the Nexus is giving him a taste of that life he could have had.
But see, here's the thing. Here's the counter argument to that is that we've never seen anything about that in 7 seasons of Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
That's true. They
really
seem to have rewritten him in more ways than one for the movies.
Yeah, they really. I mean, there's such, like you said, there's such a great, the trope of going to a place where you get your heart's desire and then it turns out to be flawed is very intrinsic with Star Trek. You know, like you said,
right.
It was in that. You know, there's like episodes like Wink of an Eye. There's lots of episodes where you go in and it's like, oh, this is everything that we want, but there's a horrible price.
Right.
But this is not what he wants. This is not what Patrick or Captain Jean-Luc Picard wants. It's
right.
It's really more along the lines of what Patrick Stewart wants, which is like an old Victorian Christmas. I mean, wasn't he born in France? I don't understand. I mean, this is.
Yeah, it was a French character, but
yeah,
I think the lines got blurred all the time.
They did. He swears in French a couple times in the first couple of seasons. He says "mad" a couple times. And Robert is from France. They go to like a vineyard. So it becomes this weird shoehorning, like you said. I don't think Star Trek ever really understood how to do like family, like a true family relationship.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that today, and I think it's probably from Gene Roddenberry. I don't think he was. I think that whole story about, you know, men have to go out there and go on these adventures and they don't really have time for families, that was probably from him to some degree, right? He wasn't a great husband, as far as I know, at least to his first wife. I don't really know that much about it, but
no, he cheated on me several times.
I imagine it comes from him originally. Maybe there was this internal struggle about being a good father, good family man, versus, you know, going out there and slaying the Hollywood dragon. I don't know.
Yeah,
so, maybe that's why it keeps coming back in Star Trek. I don't know.
But this is, I mean, I guess the interesting thing, too, is that this is so removed from Gene Roddenberry by this point in time. I mean, he'd already passed on, and it just felt so weirdly shoehorned in. Now, you said it's funny because if you watch the scene alone, it's actually a really nice, touching scene. You're right. It is very sweet and touching. It is giving him everything he wants, and he's got a family with like 3 or 4 unnamed kids and his nephew, Renee,
right,
who's there without his uncle for some reason. I don't know why. he's just there. They're all in Victorian
garb. Well, that's the one that he dies in the fire in the beginning, right?
Yeah.
He meets that guy in the episode Family, right? Like his nephew. the brother and the kid. Is the kid in that episode as well?
I don't know if he is. He might be. You might be right about that.
I think he is. I think he is.
Yeah.
And then
that's
like the only time he ever had an interaction with a kid. He always had a weird thing with kids, right? That was true from the series, right?
Yes.
Picard was always awkward with children.
Yes.
There was the one where he was with the kids in the turbo lift when he gets stuck in there. And
disaster, right? I think that's the one, yeah.
There's something where there's like the school on the Enterprise has like Picard Day.
Yes.
He has to meet all the kids at the school and he's awkward. So yeah, I think he has an awkward time with the kid on that episode, family. And then by the end of the episode, he's like cool with him.
Yeah.
And so they thought in Generation, let's kill that kid. And
right, we barely remember.
Cry about it, and then.
It's so,
I think that's where it came from.
Yeah, that's where it comes from, but it's so antithetical to everything that Jean-Luc Picard is, that this movie really, like, first of all, he's going through this, he has a scrapbook. He has a scrapbook of, I guess, of his uncle and his nephew, which is kind of weird with these weird, like, hologram borders on all the pictures. You remember
that? Oh, yeah. I remember that. That's to make it look futuristic.
Right. With these little hologram stickers that basically you get out of, like, a gumball machine. Like, they just found those and they put those in there. It's like, that is not the future, you guys. Because it's like a paper book, and he's going through it. He breaks down in tears, telling Deanna that he's always wanted a family, which is like, what? Where did this come from? It's like, are we watching the same show? And then, but it tees up this scene, which, like, that's, like, you know, this is what they wanted to get to. They wanted, like, oh, Patrick, we have got this great Victorian Christmas scene for you. And it's going to be, everyone's going to be a Christmas tree, and everyone's going to be dressed in period piece, except you, for some reason. You're still going to be in your Captain Picard outfit.
Yeah, it was a bizarre scene, and I don't think I totally got it when I was a kid. Like, I didn't understand what it was, why that was his dream, and maybe it's because I had just watched the TV show by then, and it seemed so oddly placed that I didn't know where it came from, why he was in. I thought has he gone back in time or something? Like, is it like some weird? Because it's all like they're all like. 1800s, like, dressed up, like, it's like a Christmas Carol or something. It's very strange.
Yeah. And really, Picard could have stayed in this sort of, like, dreamlike state, and we wouldn't know what was going on until who showed up, Ryan?
Guinan.
Guinan! Guinan shows up, which is
That's
even
very
weirder,
strange.
Right?
That's even strange within the internal logic of the... of the Nexus, because she had already left the Nexus, right?
She's an echo.
And so I think they acknowledge that, and she's like, "Well, I'm kind of gone, but I'm kind of here forever." Yeah. I don't know. It's weird. They needed some way to pull him out of it. I think he sees like the star exploding in the Christmas ornament or something. That's supposed to maybe give him some sense that. Something's not right. Do you remember that part?
Oh, yeah. He looks twice at Christmas trees. He has fabulous Christmas trees, and they have these ornaments. It's the only thing that tells you that you're not actually in, like, the 18th century, is that they have these little ornaments that are crystal balls, basically, and there's, like, these little flashing stars with no point of, like electricity. It's like, what is that?
Right.
And that's the only thing which breaks him out of it and makes him realize this isn't real.
Right. No, I think he sees it's the star that exploded that Dr. Soren blows up, and he kind of sees it in there. It's supposed to remind him of, like, the real conflict of the movie.
Yeah.
Is there I didn't want you sent me that clip today, and I didn't finish watching it. But is there a scene where Guinan is on a carousel or something?
Yes, it's at the end.
Some point.
That was only a 6-minute clip, Ryan. How did you not finish that? It's 6 minutes. That was your homework, and you didn't finish it?
Well, I'd seen it before. I thought I could just wing it.
No, but you're right. This scene, it's a 6-minute scene, and I'll post it on our Facebook page. I just want to talk about Star Trek if you want to check it out. And it's really a weird 3-part scene where the first part is just him leading through this kind of dreamlike world, and it's very beautiful. And the music, I have to say the music's beautiful. The music really sells it. It's like, oh, wow, I'm actually into this. And then Guinan,
I like the Generations music.
The Generations music is really good. It's better than the movie. It's better than it should be.
Yeah.
And the intro, if you listen to the opening theme, it is a very much a galloping theme.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Right.
It's like,
well, that's to echo the horses that
the most important part
Picard
of the
and
movie,
Kirk ride
right?
Later, yeah.
When they're in the Nexus riding horses, that is the most important thing, and that's why that song is echoing that, because that's what Generation is all about, riding horses. But no, you're right. So yeah. The first part is Picard getting kind of confused, and then Guinan shows him, tells him, you're still in the Nexus, and Picard says, I don't care. Basically, he goes off and has dinner, and then there's something else, which I think he sees another flashing star, and he realizes that none of this is real, and he has to go back, and then Guinan's on that carousel. She's on like a little and this carousel is actually, if you haven't seen the scene, it's actually indoors. There's like a little indoor carousel, and Guinan is sitting on
it. Oh, in Picard's fantasy home.
He's got a nice house. I mean, he really did well for himself in the Nexus, you know?
I wonder what he does for a living.
I don't know. He's like must be a barrister or something like that, right? I'm a barrister. Objection, Your Honor. You know, it's just
Or maybe he makes furniture, like handcrafted furniture.
Oh, maybe he built this house with his own hands. Maybe he just, you know, he's handcrafted everything. He makes carousels. Maybe that was his workroom, and he was finishing up that carousel. He's pissed at Guinan. So. Now this also mirrors what Kirk's fantasy is, which is, again, it's not Kirk's fantasy. It is William Shatner's fantasy in the next scene, which is like he's out in the Colorado Rockies chopping wood, making eggs for some woman. It's weird. But it is, I guess it's funny because if we look at this through the Christmas lens, Ryan, this is not the audience getting their gifts. It's the actors getting their gifts.
Right.
Don't you think? I mean, wasn't that the pitch? It's like, oh, you're going to be able to ride horses, Bill Shatner, and you're going to be able to like do like an Ebenezer Scrooge kind of vibe, Patrick Stewart. And they're like, oh, I'm on board.
Yeah. That's exactly what it is. I think I've talked about that with George and how it was like, that's how they got Shatner on board, was basically say, well, you can ride horses and, you know, we'll basically do whatever you want. There's another interesting thing about that. This is why you talk to me, and because you won't get this from anybody else. But Shatner's collar on that outfit, you know, that like puffy collar, that puffy ribbed collar that they wear.
Yeah.
It's like a quarter as tall in Generations than it was in the previous movies. And clearly, it's a very uncomfortable outfit. And clearly, he tried it on and said, I'm not wearing that collar again. You're going to make that like much shorter. And so it's much, much tinier in Generations. Oh. And I think that's also one of the things they gave him. Oh, and he's not wearing that monster maroon outfit. He's wearing a vest.
Right.
Like, it's a much lighter, more comfortable looking costume. And that's probably also something that they did for Shatner.
Now, when he goes in the original, in the opening scene, he's in that maroon vest.
In the opening scene.
In the monster. Now, you called it Monster Maroon. Why is it called Monster Maroon? Now, Ryan does a lot of props, a lot of costumes.
That's what the fans call it because it's like it's the most difficult fan costume to make and get right. I don't know. I didn't name it, but that's what they call it.
Because this is the Star Trek 2 and 4 and 6 outfits, and the color is a maroon, which is really difficult to replicate, isn't it?
Not the collar, but the jacket.
Yeah, the red.
The collar part is that white, like ribbed, puffy thing.
Yeah,
and it's much shorter in Generations than it was in any of the other movies where Shatner had to wear it. So,
right. And you showed me a swatch from the actual fabric that you actually found it, and we talked about this in the previous podcast, and it's much redder than I thought.
Yeah, you know what? I think I think the one that they used in the earlier movies was a more subdued maroon color.
Oh, okay.
And then the one that they used in Generations actually was more red, and it was the same one that I had.
Ah,
so
okay.
It changed over the course. I think it's just, the manufacturer changed. So.
Wow, okay.
But yeah, if you watch Generations, those uniforms are much more red than they were in the previous movies.
Okay. That's the inside.
Yeah, they told Shatner they would write the whole movie around him riding horses, and then he said, "Sure, I'll do it."
Exactly. He got his Christmas gift, which was to ride horses, and Patrick Stewart got to do his little acting schmacting and that stuff, and that's great. They all get to do their thing. They all got what they wanted.
Right.
The film kind of suffered, but that's okay because people watching Star Trek all their lives, watching Patrick Stewart getting like a Victorian Christmas gift and watching, you know, Captain Kirk cut wood and make eggs, just didn't quite, you know, like, that's your heart's desire? I thought we knew who you were, but maybe we were wrong.
Well, what would you have written in there? Like, what would his fantasy world have been?
I think he has to be on the bridge of the Enterprise. It's like in The Nick of Time, you know, when he has that sort of truth serum, like, drug in him, that's the thing he loves is the ship, don't you think? I mean, like, if that was his real nexus, it would be him. It's sort of like in the episode Relics in TNG where Mr. Scott walks onto the bridge, like the old bridge, which doesn't make a lot of sense because, like, he didn't care that much about the bridge. He wanted to be in the engine room, but they built the bridge. Like, that would have been Kirk's dream, don't you think? To walk on the bridge, see all of his crew there, and be able to, like, sail off among the stars.
Yeah, like in that... trapped in that perpetually in that original series time where everybody was young.
Yes, especially
I guess
when everyone
looked. Yeah.
So I'll turn around on you, Ryan. What would Captain Jean-Luc Picard's real nexus be?
I don't know. It would have been exactly as it appeared in the movie. I thought it was beautiful.
We always suspected.
No, I mean, I guess it would be the same thing. I mean, you like to think that these guys are doing what they love to do, right?
Right.
I guess why they're found, you know, the thing that drives them. They're not all, like, just bitter, wanting to be doing something else.
I'll give it one counter with Patrick Stewart or with Jean-Luc Picard is that he might be off doing archaeology because he was a big fan of archaeology as well.
Sorry, you're breaking up a little bit.
Okay.
My phone.
Oh, yeah. I said, remember, like, I think it's the chase in TNG where he goes off and his former professor shows up and gives him the opportunity to go on that big archaeological dig.
Oh, right.
So
yeah, he's got the thing with the little man inside. It's like that old sculpture.
Yeah, which
he opens it up, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
is it are all the little men inside? And he opens it up, and they are.
Yeah, and he's so happy.
Yeah.
And then at the end of this movie, he just kind of leaves it on the ground. He just doesn't even care about it. It's like the most valuable relic he has.
Right. That's in that Red Letter Media one.
Yeah, and they play it over and over again. It's so valuable, and he just, like, drops it on the ground after the Enterprise is destroyed. Like, well, so much for that. If for me, he'd be on the Enterprise, or he would be doing archaeology. But...
Yeah.
Well, let me. We're not going to take too long on this, right? This will be a short one. I have to go off and eat dinner in a minute. And, you know, it's Christmas. It's Christmas time, and I want it to be full of mirth and joy. So let me ask you this, Ryan. This is my gift to you. If you could have anything for Star Trek in 2017, what would it be? What would your wish be?
Oh wow.
Anything. You're in the Nexus. You're in the Star Trek Nexus. Pick.
Well, maybe I'd like to see another season of The Next Generation. This is like, of course I don't want to see another season of The Next Generation because I know it would be terrible, but you're asking me like a dream thing. I would say like a great another season of TNG, like equivalent to like season 5 or something.
Yeah, what?
You know?
Like, what if Netflix plopped down like $100 million and they did like 10 episodes of TNG?
And they did like the CGI Grand Moff Tarkin treatment to all the guys, so they look like they did back then.
I just watched that. I just left that. I can't believe they did that. That is so crazy. Is that the weirdest thing, Ryan?
I didn't see it.
Oh my
god!
I
just know about it.
You have to watch it. I'm sorry, you just spoiled it. Spoiler, folks. Grand Moff Tarkin's in this. Sorry, but he's not. Peter Cushing is not in this. And you can stop it right now, but I'll tell you this right now. He's in multiple scenes, Ryan. He's a major character in this.
Oh, yeah?
You have to watch it. It is bizarre.
Yeah, James was telling me about it. I knew about that. I just, you know, read it and all this various spoiler stuff. And I know Leia's in it, too, at some point. But
Yeah.
But I'll see it eventually. But yeah, I guess they could do that with these next generation guys and make them look like they did back then.
Well, you know, I have a little mini podcast I recorded last night, which was about, and you can chime in on this, but like my conjecture is that Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan sort of ruined blockbuster movies in some ways because Spock died, but then they brought him back, thereby like making even death irrelevant for movies.
Right.
And the only way that the movies have importance now is when the actual actor dies. I mean, in Beyond, when they had that touching moment where Zachary Quinto looks at the picture of, you know, Spock and the whole crew, that's actually moving because we know that Leonard Nimoy's dead and we're never going to see that character again.
Right.
But now we can. Now they'll just CGI.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's also never quite the same when you know the actor is dead. I don't know. I didn't see it, but from the people I talked to, it's a little weird. It's not quite the same.
It's not perfect.
And I think a big part of that is that you know the guy's dead.
Yes. That's the meta narrative on that. So, but I mean, like, so you'd want them to go back and do like an eighth season and make everyone young, like basically as though they just finished like the seventh season.
Yeah, and I would want the writing to be on par with like the fifth season or so.
Yeah.
The peak.
I just watched Fistful of Data. That was my last podcast, and ooh, that was a rough one.
was that season 5?
I think it was like season 6. I think they were pretty much out of ideas for what to do with Data and Worf and all those guys.
I like season 6 as well. I just think that maybe season 6 and season 4 are about equivalent. Maybe 4 is a little better.
They're building up to it. They hit the height that season 5, and then they kind of went down the other side of the roller coaster. I think.
Yeah. There were still some cool ones in 6, I remember thinking.
Yeah.
But
and 7, too.
I was young.
Yeah.
Everything I thought then was different than now.
Yeah, it's changed.
Like the Nexus scene. I thought it was like a cool thing you went into. But now I get it. It's about having a family. And that's what I have now. And it's great. So I get why he would want to stay there if he had never had a family before and could suddenly experience what that was like. I wouldn't want to leave.
No, I mean, because we haven't talked about this too much, but I mean, having kids, it really puts us through our own nexus, doesn't it? I mean, it puts you in you see your past in a whole different way, and you don't want to leave the wonderfulness of having Penny being 2.5 years old forever, right?
Right.
It's amazing.
Right.
It's
yeah, and everything is so. I feel like you become. I think some people from when they're very young are very empathetic towards everything and caring, but a lot of people aren't. I think a lot of people when they have kids, they start to feel that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I certainly do. Like whenever I hear any story about, you know, kids dying or suffering or, you know, seeing kids in Aleppo or whatever, it's, you know, it's heartbreaking. So I don't think I was like that when I saw, you know, that movie when I was, you know, a teenager. I don't think any of that meant anything.
No, I mean, the idea, and even me watching that, I watched that scene where Renee and Robert died in a fire, which again is a little weird. Like in the 24th century, they died in a fire. I don't understand that. What were they?
Right.
Are they like sleeping in?
Can they just beam them out?
Couldn't they beam them out? Can they? I mean, I mean, if there's even like one little part of them, they can grow them a new whole body, right? This is, it's a little strange, right. But it you know, it was a convenient plot point that they just kind of skipped over and Patrick Stewart cried to cover it. He's like, oh, well, he's crying.
I always did find it was funny that he says he was so gentle. And he's like, he's so gentle.
Who, Rene the kid?
That's what Picard says about Rene, yeah.
Yeah,
he says,
yeah.
He was so gentle while he's crying.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
I was like,
I get it now.
Gentle.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. It's touching and beautiful now.
I know, Ryan. This is great. This is great. You're right. I'm on board with you. Like, I watched it again. I was like, you know, like if you extract the scene and if you just watch that first part, it's really beautiful. It's touching. It's like, yes, I want to be with kids and I love it. And then, like, you watch the rest of the movie, and it's like, this doesn't make any sense. This is completely inserted into a whole other movie, and they should just ran like 10 minutes of like Patrick Stewart doing his one man Christmas Carol. You know, I'd be like, oh, well, that's pretty good. You know,
did you watch it? You must have watched it recently or rewatched it rather, right?
Oh, Generations.
Yeah.
No, I haven't. I haven't seen it in a while.
Oh, okay.
I just watched.
Did you know that there's a something I didn't notice at the time, but that observatory, that Federation observatory they go on to,
yeah,
that's destroyed.
The Argus
Array? Actually, yeah, it's made in the style of the original series. Like, it's supposed to be a really old station, and it's all like it's all destroyed and all the lights are off. But if you look at the panels and all the signage and stuff on the walls, it's basically the kind of stuff that they put on the old Enterprise. Like,
really?
Those old engraved signs that they stuck on doors, and the panels are all like in the original series colors with those little round lenses on everything. Yeah, it's very weird. I didn't realize that until it was pointed out in something I read. Was,
wow,
that
okay.
The production designer made that observatory look like something out of the original series. But it's, you can't really tell because it's all like dark and stuff. But yeah, it's like the only example aside the bridge set in Relics, mm-hmm, where they did that. They made something in the Next Generation look like the original series era.
Yeah, that's
well,
true.
They did that in the Deep Space Nine episode as well.
But, right, Trial and Tribulations. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, you're right.
Right.
I never would have guessed that. If I mean, of course, this is your job. This is what you do. You look at all these things, and you're so good at that, at picking up all these things. And I'm like, oh, they're fighting, and Data's crying. I don't know what's going on, you know? And Malcolm McDowell's saying something about something to Lursan Bator, Captain Picard. It's so good to see you. I'm fascinated.
I have one other. I'm just piling all these Generations things in here.
Yes.
But there's another funny thing. But the observatory is called the Amargosa Observatory.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah. The Amargosa. What's that for? What is that from?
They shot. Okay, so Amargosa. There's a part of the desert near Death Valley called the Amargosa Desert, and there's like an Amargosa opera house, and it's like some weird stuff there. But anyway, you have to drive through there to get to Valley of Fire State Park, where they shot all the stuff with Soren and all, you know, the scenes later in the movie.
Yeah.
And so when I saw that, I thought, well, they must have just gotten this name while they were driving to shoot that stuff with Soren. Seen that on a sign and said, oh, that's cool. Let's just call the observatory the Amargosa Observatory. So
Rick Berman's driving. He's in like the passenger van and he's like, oh, Amargosa Observatory. Oh, yeah, we can do that. Hey, guys, so let's do Amargosa. And
well, it's just they probably had some placeholder name in there. It was like, you know.
Right.
That, I don't know. Star Shine Observatory, and they're like, we got to change that. So look at that word. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There's,
but anyway. Sorry, that was really stupid.
Although, if they called it the Starshine Observatory, I would be on board 100%. That would be the. That would be... I just want to see Patrick Stewart call it the Starshine Observatory over and over again. Let's go to the Starshine Observatory. Like, oh God, that's so great. We should go. We should make a pilgrimage to those locations for Generations, Ryan.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know where they are.
Let's go.
It's in Valley of Fire State Park in Nevada, and I also know where they got the stuff in Star Trek V where they're meeting God. That's all at the Throne of Pentacles, and that's even closer.
Well, we should go there first,
LA,
then.
Somewhere.
We should work our way
out. Not L.A., but like outside L.A., yeah.
Oh, let's do that.
Well, before we were shooting Marooned, the short film that you were in that I directed, mm-hmm. George and I did kind of a tour of all these places where we knew they had shot science fiction space movies. And so we went to Valley of Fire, and we made jokes about Dr. Soren being there. And we went to Throne of Pentacles and made jokes about the god of Shakari. And then we went to Death Valley and ultimately settled on Death Valley. But and then, of course, there's Vasquez Rocks. But
that's too
recognizable.
Two on the nose, yeah. Wow, so we could have shot your short film like out in Nevada. That would have been crazy.
Well, I originally wanted to shoot it at this place called Goblin Valley in Utah. It's a state park, and it's where they shot
Galaxy Quest, right?
Galaxy Quest. Yeah. It's really, really bizarre looking. It's one of the coolest places I've ever seen. Like much cooler than any of the national parks in a lot of ways, but it was just too remote, too hard to get there.
Yeah, getting a crew up there would be crazy. Let's put a cap on this, because I know people are fascinated by that part of the discussion of our little trip down memory lane. But this has been my nexus, Ryan. See, like, you took me down into those memories, and that's why I want to live when I'm younger, and I'm shooting a film with you, Ryan. You're directing it, you've written it, and I'm dressed like Captain Kirk, and everything's great. I want to go back there, Ryan. That's my nexus.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Yes.
We have to make it happen. 2017. It's all happening.
I think I'm in my nexus. I'm in my nexus right now, actually.
Are you?
Yeah. With the kids. Yeah. When they're like 2 years old, I think.
It's a good time.
It's pretty good.
It's a good time.
Yeah.
Christmas with kids is amazing. There's nothing better. So, and you're going to get a good 6 or 8 years more of that. And then they're going to be like, just give me stuff. So
okay.
Enjoy it. The Nexus bubble breaks, and then you're stuck, you know, like in Vasquez Rocks, and you know, it's not as much fun.
Okay.
All right. Well, Ryan Nagata, what is it? 3F Studios? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I guess so.
What's the latest prop you're working on? Tell me a prop you're working on before we go.
I'm making a replica of Neil Armstrong's spacesuit for a collector.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And in the planning stages for some other things like that.
Okay.
So, yeah, I make a lot of spacesuits. Yeah. You could just look for my Instagram profile.
What is it? What's
Instagram.com.
Yep. Okay.
/ Ryan Nagata.
Oh, okay. So Instagram.com.
And that's where I have all this. Yeah, that's all where I have all the stuff I'm working on. Then there's our YouTube channel, 3F Studios, but we haven't done anything for that in a while, so.
Okay.
Maybe next year.
It's close. Next year's very close, Ryan. We're going to start it up, and Star Trek's not going to stop. We've got to turn up the gas now, so.
Yeah, I have to think of a new costume to make for the convention next year, if we go.
I want you to make me a costume for something for this podcast, and I'll talk to you about it like offline. But it's
okay.
Talk to you about it a little. So, all right. So we'll finish this up, Ryan. You are my Christmas gift, Ryan, for this podcast. Talking to you is always fun.
Well, you're welcome.
and thank you so much. And for everyone listening, have a happy holiday if you celebrate Christmas. Happy holiday if you celebrate New Year's, all that sort of stuff. And we'll see you. Either before or after 2016, I haven't figured out yet. But we're going to make it all work, and 2017 is going to be even better because I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about... Ryan, take it.
Star Trek.
Just with...
Destruct sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
Error. Flaw. Imperfection.
When the train comes in, everybody rides.
Blah, blah, blah.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island, yeah, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
And it might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you